The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by the nice folks over at DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS, and brought to you by the nice folks at Body Bio. Get 20% off Gut Plus by using code RTRS20 at bodybio.com. The nice folks over at Mortgage CS, become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP at mortgagecs.com/Ricky. LL Pivorsky Jewelers, the 12 days of Pivorsky are going on right now with the deals, 12 deals of Christmas. LLPivorsky.com. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with code Dave Silver. On the show today, the Sixers lose a game against Charlotte, which we will never talk about again because it didn't matter, then win one on the road in Orlando. The Milton Melton backcourt is succeeding beyond our wildest dreams. Can we find a way to get this out of these guys when Maxey and Harden get back? And finally, does Montrezl Harrell maybe have the yips for dunking? It's possible. I did mention Kinetic Skateboarding, one of our sponsors. They have, if you're listening to this on Saturday, they are taking part in Small Business Saturday. Of course, most of our Ricky sponsors here are small businesses, and we ask that you support them. Today, for Kinetic, 10% off any skate deck, 20% off all Kinetic apparel, 20% off snowboard outerwear, $99 custom completes for skateboards, and buy one, get one half off all Vans. And they do have the Kinetic Hoops collection in a new color available on that royal blue, which is pretty sweet. Go to kineticskateboarding.com and use code DaveSilver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is already at the site of this year's Super Bowl to get an early spot to watch the birds. That is one Mike Levin.
That's right. I'm at my sister's for Thanksgiving, playing a little basketball, playing a little football. It's good to be able to come here every year to play a ton of sports and track how much more sore my body gets as I age.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
It never stops, by the way. It just continues to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. But I did truck a couple kids. That always feels good. My nephew's taller than me now. It just keeps happening, you know.
Yeah. How old is he?
Kids are like 6'3" now. What's going on? How are like 15-year-olds like 6'3"? It shouldn't be allowed.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, we keep evolving.
I've been saying this. If I was 6'3", I would have made myself be good enough to play professionally in like Spain. I just would something. Second division, something. I would have, at least for like a couple of years, played. I would have had to do it. I would have never forgiven myself. Now I have on the front end, like I can be 5'11" and like just like regular okay.
Yeah.
And but like if I was 6'3", I would have to like hold myself to a standard that would have forced me to play professional basketball somewhere.
So the difference between you playing professional basketball and not is those 4 inches.
4 inches, yeah. Well, I'm 4 inches in like the cascading effects of what that would have happened.
Right.
Like if I had been 6'3" and then played a lot more high level basketball growing up, then I would have, you know, committed to it more instead of just committing to this whatever fucking shit I do on this goddamn podcast.
It's like when they hold kids back so they'll be 1 year older to play in the grade, so they get like that would have been that effect. The four inches would have had that effect.
Exactly. 6'1", I wouldn't apply. I couldn't have been good. But like 6'3", I would have somewhere. Some professional league somewhere would have had me. I would have done it.
So Shake Milton, at one point in his Sixers career, was sort of like the original Tyrese Maxey for us. We were like, oh my God, we drafted this guy. He might be a really good guard, great scorer. Had that run, of course, and highlighted against Doc's Los Angeles Clippers, where he scored, what did he score in that game? 39, whatever the fuck he scored.
Yeah,
in January of 20. It's February, January of 20. And then a combination of like injuries, like poorly timed injuries sort of at the beginning of the season, and his game just sort of falling apart. The shot fell apart. Looked like he didn't really have a plan when he would go to the basket. Just never got on a roll. We would see flashes here and there, but never got on a roll. And here we are in 2022 with Maxey and Harden out. And he has gotten on one of those rolls again. The shot he appears to be good again, and he is confident in, which has, in my opinion, if I'm to guess, the combination of playing time and that shot going down has had a phrase that Mike has coined, a cascading effect on the rest of his game, in that he seems to like be a better distributor at this point, like, and because people are buying the shot a little bit, and he's got that little mid-range thing cooking, and we have a really interesting thing where it seems like if this guy gets 23, 25 minutes a game at least, he's a really effective player. And my overall question is, this is great for now, and it's great to see. I do wonder what happens when the other guys get back.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a clearly, we talked about this a little bit, but like such a rhythm player where he needs to be like, feel the game out and find his, you know, get his touches, get his feel for the game. And it's the like, in the James Harden era, it's such a, he's holding the ball so much, and then Embiid's holding the ball so much, and everybody else is kind of just like, just catch it and shoot it. And it's just like not his best stuff. But even his catch and shoot game over the last week or two has been significantly improved. I'm really happy for him, man. Like, it was a shorter stretch, and then sort of dominated by the pandemic, onset of the pandemic, that when Shake was going from like, oh, like kind of quirky, fun guy that can they handle the ball a little bit and improve, to in the bubble, like he's our starting point guard in the playoffs, and that. was maybe a little overmatched for him. But he's aged since then. He's 26 now. He's just like a really solid player, finds his rhythm in his game. Like when the shot's on, it sets up other things. I think he's had the best passing stretch of his career, I think, over the last week or two. He has those wraparound passes. There was Embiid. I forget where I read this. Might have been Rich Hoffman's article in The Athletic, I think, where Embiid said like he's one of the only guys on the team that can throw pocket passes, and it's because of how long his arms are. He's always that's why I always loved him out of SMU, is because he's 6'5", shot over 40% for three seasons, and had a 7-foot wingspan.
Right,
and
he looks every bit of it. By the way, like when you're looking at him, he looks long, and I would even say like he's generally like a bad defensive player for somebody who has that build, but he. A little bit better, I would say, during this run. Not quite as clueless, I think.
Yeah, I think I never thought he was a bad defender. He's not, you know, super athletic. His athleticism actually shows up more on the defensive end than it does on the offensive end, but which usually is the opposite. But he has at least like long enough arms and decent instincts where even if he gets blown by, he can help. And I think Kyle Newbeck wrote about it that this was some of his best off-ball defensive work, where he's helping rotate and then recover and that kind of thing. I'm just happy for him. It's Shake. Like, he's been here a really long time, and Embiid loves him. And like, yeah, to your point, like the shot kind of disappeared. He was dealing with the ankle stuff all of last year. It was an ankle, and there was like a wrist. I'm trying to remember what his injuries were. It's hard. All Sixers injuries, you know, are. Go into this hell zone of tornado injuries that you're just like, what are we doing? How are we supposed to remember who's hurting what? When everyone's hurting everything and I'm hurting, or we're hurting. But well, he's past that, and now he looks good. And the trick, like you said in the intro, is like the trick is like, how can we incorporate how good he is now, mm-hmm. how good Melton is now, which should regress a little bit, at least the shooting numbers.
Yep.
When those other guys get back. Because the for a long time, for the first month or so of the season, it was like the bench sucks, they have no scoring, and all of a sudden now it's like, well, they're carrying the team and like treading water while their three best players are injured. So that's a task for the coaching staff to work out, because they shouldn't die as much when Embiid's off the floor now that there's some more like comfort with everybody else.
Well, so I think it's much less tricky for, I think you would agree, it's much less tricky for D'Anthony Melton than it is for Shake, because he's a better defender. He does not need the ball as much, though he is capable. The Melton thing is tricky on a number of levels. Let me list them out here. First of all, Maxey makes Melton a little tricky, because Maxey already, you would hope, has a bunch of minutes in the game where he is the like sort of the primary offensive option, because he does seem to thrive where when, you know, he's on one end, he's better when Harden's on the court, but on another end, having those minutes where he can just sort of go is helpful for him. The other thing that is complicated with Shake Melton is that he's an unrestricted free agent after this year. And like it is part of the calculus, I think, in there too, especially a team with so few trade assets. If he becomes an asset here and he is unrestricted, that's another thing. And I think that probably the final thing is they do need a ball handler off the bench, right? Like they do need a point guard, but my concern is when he goes down to 12 minutes a game, when it counts, do we get the old Shake Melton back and not this Shake Melton, you know, if he's only playing 12 to 15 minutes and his job is to come in there and sort of be the point guard and not be, you know, Mr. Offense all the time. I don't know. I would love to have them find a way to keep this around, because they do need somebody like him. I guess I'm just sort of skeptical that he will be able to be this in that they'll be able to find this particular role for him is my concern.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wonder, you know, if the way for him to be effective is like sustained touches. Obviously it's not like this Shake Melton in the playoffs is going to be like, we got to find a way to get him the ball for 30 minutes a game and let him do everything. But in the regular season, and to give guys breaks, and so Tyrese Maxey and Harden are not playing, you know, 39 minutes a night, like this is useful, and this is something that should be continued. But I wonder if the move is like, well, let's pair Harden and Embiid together and bring and let Shake be in there with Maxey and hopefully B-ball Paul, and let it be like, okay, you there's no center that you just have to stand off to the side off of. It's more like you do have a little more time to like get into the paint, get your touch, get your rhythm down. And then, you know, him and Melton are a nice pairing, but I think also Melton goes with Harden so well.
Well, Melton goes with anybody, which is why he's so good.
For sure. But yeah, I mean, and I, to the point of like defense, like when both guards went down, it was different with Embiid going down, because now it's just like, just do anything you can. But it was okay. Now without Harden and Maxey, they need to be a better defensive team. And that was trending upwards anyway. And it's continued. They're still second in the league in defense. Their net rating right now is seventh in the league, which is pretty good for a team that before yesterday was 500. Now they're 10-9. You know, teams aren't hitting many threes against them. I think that should go the other way soon. They're literally, their defense is, opponents are shooting the worst percentage from three against them, which is due for a regression, but they're also only attempting sixth most in the league. So they're preventing threes for the most part. It seems like they're just, the ones they're giving up are wide open and being missed. So that should normalize. But, you know, I thought there were a couple lineups out there last night where it was like Shake and, when Melton was out, it was like Shake and Niang and Dan House and Trez, and I'm like, is there a defender out here? Like, can we get one? And they to their credit, like, they, you know, it's the Magic, who I like and think will be scrappier later in the season. Let's just say it. Let's admit what I know about myself, that I do believe in the Magic more than I probably should.
Oh, but it seems like they have a million guys that would be fun to watch, to be honest with you. Like, sure, I'm watching the Magic, I'm like, ooh, look at that one. And look at that one.
Of course, it's a grab bag. It's like a, yeah. There's the stocking stuffers of guys that would be interesting.
Ooh, look at young Tobias Harris, Paolo Banchero. Look
absolutely
at that.
That's just... But they played pretty well. It was a good win from start to finish last night. They even, you know, any win against an NBA team without your top three players is a good win. So I'm happy about it.
Got this email from Greg. Greg says, I have been on the Elite train for a while, Elite from Body Bio, but I started using Gut Plus recently because I regularly feel bloated, uncomfortable, and gassy after eating. Sorry if that's TMI, but here's the ultimate review. I took it on Thanksgiving Day and felt nothing, no stomach issues all day, totally worth every penny. If Mike's fragile tummy and my stubborn tum-tum are doing better with it, what else does one need to know? A+ to Gut Plus.
I do genuinely agree with that. That is, yeah. I have been taking it regularly, once in the morning, once at night, and it's been extremely helpful.
Gut Plus is from our sponsor, Body Bio. Small business, local. There you go. Family owned, family operated. Gut Plus is their newest product. It is for anyone who does have those stomach issues that you may be taking probiotics for. Don't take the probiotic anymore. Not that it's bad for you. It's probably just not doing anything because it's probably not a perfect match for your body. What Gut Plus does, it is a prebiotic and postbiotic. Prebiotic, what it does, it goes and gets rid of all of the bacteria that is bad and allows your body to produce the good bacteria. That is the probiotic stuff. And then the postbiotic gets rid of all those symptoms. Gut Plus, we've heard from a few listeners now, and Mike, it's made a difference. If you're going to take one gut supplement, it is this one. That irritability, that bloat that you're chasing with other supplements, this is the, if you're only going to take one, this is the one that you need. One pill a day, maybe two. Go to bodybio.com, use code RTRS20. That is bodybio.com, RTRS20. You get 20% off anything. As Greg mentioned, Elite, also a great supplement from Body Bio that has shown a difference. I'm taking Balance Oil right now. Just a lot of great stuff, and it explains everything to you. That's the other great thing about Body Bio. It's not just a list of supplements. It explains why they're all important. Again, bodybio.com, bodybio.com, code RTRS20. So it's funny, the other person who has thrived over the last few games is Tobias, though he has thrived doing the exact thing you don't want Tobias Harris to do once everyone else comes back. But though I did think, to a certain extent, I'm like, if we're in a playoff game and we need a bucket, just give the guy the ball.
you are thinking that genuinely?
Well, I'm just going through my brain. Look, I want them to get rid of Tobias Harris. I do. I think the team would be better. No offense, Tobias. I think the team would just be better without him on it. I genuinely believe that. But I was going through this. I remember one time when we had Derek on the pod right before the season started, and we were doing it. I was at the Sevens, the Sixers facility in Delaware, I think I was. And we were watching a game. We watched like a preseason game, and you were on the internet. And I said, Derek, this year is, because the Sixers had Trey Burke at the time, is Trey Burke the best guy at the end of a game to give the ball to and go get a bucket? And he wouldn't answer the question because it was an obvious yes. And I wonder if, like, still, given all this, if we just needed one bucket, would you give the ball to Tobias Harris?
I think it's nice. I mean, he is certainly a guy that has, over the last little bit, so this stretch, right? What is, like, new Tobias going to look like when he's asked to do old Tobias things? And I think that it's been a nice blend. Like, obviously, he was rusty in the first half of the Brooklyn game because he was out for a bit. This game, I think it wasn't like him just ISOing and holding the ball and waiting for it. There are a couple of those possessions, but I think he's been getting out in transition. Things, he at least last night was finishing around the rim. I thought in a pretty nice way, and he still took seven threes. He made one of them, but I'm fine with him taking seven threes in a game when he's, you know, asked to do old Tobias stuff. So I think that's all very positive. And he is, like, to your point, like, in the playoffs, when you need, when the defense is tightened up and they're going to double the shit out of Embiid and they're not going to call those fouls, and Harden is less capable of getting by people off the dribble than he can, and Maxey maybe has, like, let's just pick a team, like OG Anunoby on him, and it's hard for him to, you know, just blow by anybody or make something happen, bigger defender that can move. Like, having Tobias do what he does, which is get to the middle and take, like, a get his little bump and take a contested leaner. He's good at that, man. He is. That's not a, like, long term efficient ideal shot, but as far as an at the end of the
he's
game,
he's good at it
type of thing. He's pretty good at it. He's confident from there. Tobias from, like, 2 to 4 feet shoots like 20%. It seems like when he's, like, in that, he's not at the rim, but he's just close. It seems like that's he's PJ Tucker from there. But Tobias from, like, 6 to 12,
yeah,
like, that's his little zone, and he's got a nice touch around there, and he's been good, and he's been huge. And for them to, it really is, like, you know, it's the Magic, and they have him again tomorrow, but they're missing their three best players. This could have gone, and they didn't give themselves, like, a good cushion at the beginning of the season. So this could have gone really badly, and Tobias is one of the guys over the last couple of games that has been keeping them alive. And I don't disagree that matchup dependent, obviously. I would not immediately scoff at the idea of, even if Maxey, Harden, and Embiid are out there, Tobias might have the best matchup and might be able to get the most normal, like, decent look at the rim.
Process worked.
Hey, man, options.
You know what? This is why Tobias Harris.
If he's got Grayson Allen on him, then absolutely.
Tobias Harris would just be so much better as a 16-minute a game bench player. He just would. Please put Melton in the starting lineup and put Harris on the bench. Please. Who is more likely, do you think, to be on the Sixers in the playoffs, Tobias Harris or Shake Milton?
On the Sixers team?
Yeah. If you had, if I were to tell you one would be traded and one would be on the Sixers this playoffs, who do you think is more likely?
Tobias by a lot. I mean, I think they're both pretty close to 100%, but I think there's at least some chance that when all these guys come back and Shake is sort of a little uncomfortable in his other role because of his contract situation, that Daryl could get a little chancy and try to move him and somebody else for someone that is more equipped for the, you know,
for the grind
role that they're asking for him. Yeah.
So, Furk, what is Furk shooting from three this year? There's something happened to Furk's, like, Furk was always, like, always had that
36.
Okay. Which is an improvement, market improvement over last year.
Everybody on the team is shooting pretty good from three, except for Embiid and Harden, basically.
It does seem like something broke in Furk's brain a little bit. He used to always make flashy passes or something and think he's better than he is, but he's got, like, a little Matisse Thybulle to him now where he just feels like his head isn't in it. I don't know. I love watching him play. I love when he shoots. I love when he shoots and it goes in, but it does seem like there's something wrong with him. I can't.
Well, you know, I mean, he had the, it was Georgia, right? That he got into the fight.
The fight. Yeah.
Internationally with, that was fun. Maybe that, I mean, he's a different guy when he's playing international ball. And I think maybe the team could have asked him to be doing more of that. And
fighting?
He hasn't played that much.
Oh.
Well, yeah, fighting for sure. And just, like, not just being the catch and shoot guy. But I'm happy with, I mean, I'm really happy with pretty much everything everyone has given them. Like, look, we can get to, I didn't think it was a good on the scale of this season Montrezl Harrell game. Finished with the plus 16.
He passed up like two dunks, though. It was
he
weird.
Passed up a bunch of dunks. He is now the guy in a long line of guys of my whole life of watching the Sixers where I now have no faith in him and this archetype to do the right thing. And so I'm always expecting the worst. And so like the mistakes are heightened in a way that a guy like Shake, even previously, I'm forgiving those mistakes. And Montrez, I'm just like, I'm just not. And so him passing up dunk attempts, him like fumbling the ball, anything on defense where the guys, you know, start drooling at the opportunity to go at him. I hold that against him, but I'm trying to be, you know, an honest arbiter of opinions here. And so it was on the scale. It was a solid Montrez game. You can't blame him too much for it.
But he's got that Ben thing now where he only dunks if there's nobody there.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, the Magic are a tough matchup because there's
very long
6'9" guys.
Yeah.
On the court. Man, Bol Bol. What an entertaining watch.
He seems good. I mean,
as an offensive player, absolutely. Yeah. And okay. Yeah. I mean, he's capable of doing a lot. I don't know what, like, there's still stuff to work out, I would say. But as an offensive player, he can play. And as a defensive player, he's long as hell. Shot selection, choice, whatever. But yeah, Trez, he did his, you know, everybody's helping. It is a nice all hands on deck situation. The only guy that seemingly is not helping and seemingly has lost the plot is Dan House. He's weirdly like playing fewer minutes at this point.
He sucks.
He's frequently confused. He like got in there and immediately took like a corner step back three.
Yeah, he sucks.
And airballed and then like was out of the play for like 15 seconds of it. So that's tough. I know it was terrible. Definitely like a, you know, he was in the G League for a lot of last year, or at least like had been waived, and then Utah signed him to a 10-day and then played him a lot. Because they needed him as like a capable two-way, you know, 3-and-D wing that can't do much else. And he was good, and it was like, okay, maybe that he's figured something out and turned a corner, but it might have been just like the shock to the system of like not being on a team.
Right.
And now that he's like signed to a reasonable contract again, he's back to doing his old Dan House stuff.
The biggest contract of his life.
It's not very good. I think he's fine. Not a guy that I would be terrified of playing for 6 minutes in a playoff series. I think he is capable of standing up defensively for the most part. But some choices on the offensive end I wish would not be made.
And finally, look, it was not as good a game as he played against the Nets, of course.
George Niang?
No, I was going to talk about, we have Niang to talk about as well. B-Ball Paul just seems like he is a little more normal in a good way every single game.
Yeah.
It's amazing what playing time will do. And
it's amazing what playing time will do. Let's just let that sit. Yeah, there.
I will give, I guess I can't give Doc credit because he has no other options, but he played.
Literally, Charles Bassey was waived and then Michael Foster Jr. was cut to make room for Sabin Lee. There's literally now no other options.
Right.
Dying to play anyone else.
What was the bad game Paul Reed had? Like maybe five or six games.
He had like two in a row that were rough, for sure.
He is just doing more and more. There's like two times a game, maybe three, maybe one, where Paul Reed is like, I'm the best player in the league, and takes some shot or does something that you're like, nope, you are not the best player in the league. You got to chill out. But the rest of the game, he just defensively and offensively, specifically maybe offensively, because he was always pretty good defensively. He's just less chaotic in a really good way, and he's where he's supposed to be on the court doing the thing that he's supposed to do.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's amazing what playing time can do. Like, mm-hmm. There was a quote, I think it might have been after the Nets game, where he was like, I just realized, like, I don't have to do that much. All I have to do is set screens and roll and protect the... Like, he's like, I guess it's a little boring, but I guess I'll do it. Like that was the vibe he was giving. Like, oh, you just, that's all you want me to do? Fine. And then like, after the season, you can go play and pick up runs and LA Fitness runs, and then you can do more fun B-ball Paul stuff.
Yes.
But for the most part, in this role, screen and roll, and then use your length defensively, like offensive rebounds, he always makes it happen. The fact that he's getting offensive rebounds against the Orlando Magic, who has like 4'7" guys playing, mm-hmm. and he just has a knack for the ball, makes it happen. He did foul out, which is totally fine. Like, people that are anti B-ball Paul are always like worried about he's going to foul out. It's like, in a game that matters, I am not no one is going to give a shit about B-ball Paul fouling out in 12 minutes. If it happens, awesome. Great. That's fine. He's not going to be asked to play more than that in games that matter. But he's great. Had a really hell of a pass, offensive rebound into a pass to George Niang for a three cross court. That was beautiful. I mean, he's just like a ton of dribble handoffs, rolling. Sometimes they're finding him, sometimes they're not. Just normal stuff. And I really am like very proud of him for that. Did you see the Lauren Rosen tweeted that Matisse is wearing B-ball Paul's sweatshirt on the bench?
The hoodie. Yeah.
The hoodie on the bench. And then immediately, which is nice of Matisse, and it's a classic Matisse thing to do. Mm-hmm. Wish Matisse had been healthy for this stretch of time, because it would be interesting to see him get also more like consistent run and see if he can get a little more comfortable.
I've seen enough consistent run out of Matisse Thybulle. It'd be quite
for
nice
sure, but it would also be nice to see it. Like, they need to see it. They need to be able to see if he's, you know, in certain matchups he's going to be necessary. And I would like to see him be necessary with a better offensive, at least stable stuff. But B-ball Paul immediately after the game replies to the tweet. Like, there's no way he has showered yet, and he's already saying, like, get your hoodies, DM me for info, only $100.
That's it. I'm buying a hoodie right now.
It's B-ball, man.
Yeah.
He's I'll great, just out the mud.
Actually, I'll send him the DM while we're talking.
I love him. I'm proud of him for getting more minutes and like, yeah. Yeah. But Niang, we mentioned Niang, like, while you're ordering the hoodie.
He's been incredible.
From B-ball Paul's DMs. He's just been awesome. He's just like, it's hard to, you know, the feeling we have watching the Sixers is often at odds with the reality of the Sixers. Like
that's fair. It's definitely fair to say.
Yes. Me on the podcast a couple of days ago, or whenever it was, asking CJ, hey, when was the last time they finished with like a top 10 rebounding rate? And it was like, oh, 2 years ago. And I was like, it feels like a lifetime. It feels like a full lifetime. And so watching George Niang, to me, feels like, when was the last time they had a shooter that was actually hitting shots? And it feels like forever ago. I mean, I guess JJ was solid here for a long time. But as far as like a bench shooter that was supposed to be a shooter, that was actually coming in and hitting shots. George Niang is shooting 46% from three.
And doesn't need any room to shoot and is confident and is actually like effective dribbling the ball twice when they close out on him.
Absolutely. 100%. Per 36, he is shooting 9.8 threes per 36. And he's shooting 46% from three. He did miss his first foul shot of the year last night, which I'm sure was tough for him. But he was 5-7 last night. From deep, just like does things right. And it's nice to have a talking shit guy that is actually backing it up.
Yes.
So it's pretty good.
So we got this email.
He played in crunch time while he pulled up. He played in crunch time, but PJ, it seems like PJ's dealing with an ankle thing. I would say PJ for a game just so he can like chill out. Like, man, somebody. Just it's a tough time for PJ, because when he's the only guy on the court that like has no lift and like can't dunk, because at this point I don't think he can dunk, PJ. That's fine. But like when it's him and Trez on the court together and both of them are like kind of having like rock hands and can't have any lift on the offensive end and are both a little bit afraid to shoot, it's like just too much. So hopefully Trez will not be there any longer and then PJ can be that only guy, but there's occasional some like bleak moments of like this. Theoretically, this is an NBA team and we're watching NBA basketball, and it would be nice if sometimes someone went up and just dunked an easy look and instead of like missing a 2.5-foot bunny. But tough stretch for PJ. Hopefully give him a game or two off and he can get back to being at least like normal, like 4 points a game guy.
Yeah.
With how good he is defensively, which it is good.
Like he's been great.
He's doing great. What they're asking him to do on defense. And I'm sure they're not like talking to him about offense. No one's even mentioning it to him, but they're just like, I mean, like you could be better though, right? Like a little bit.
Email from Matt. I had mentioned on the pod a couple of pods ago that there was a LinkedIn post mentioning the Ricky from Mortgage CS. And there was a family that had purchased a home through Mortgage CS. They looked excessively normal. We got an email from that fella, Matt. I want to start off by saying how amazing Mortgage CS is. I am the normal guy in the photo that Ben Stucker from Mortgage CS posted on his LinkedIn. We had used Mortgage CS previously when refinancing. So when my wife and I decided to put in a bid on a house, it was an obvious choice. The owners of the house were placing a bid and wanted it to sell fast. We live in Washington, D.C., and our first realtor tried to persuade us to use a local company because he says they're faster and more well-known. I told him I wasn't going to use anyone else, and we placed the bid saying we could close in 21 days. This helped us beat out another couple. Yada, yada, yada. Mortgage CS, they are truly the best. Mortgage CS. Mortgage CS works for you. They are a mortgage broker, not a lender. So they don't have the money. They go find the money for you. And the best thing about Mortgage CS, three great things. First, responsive. Like they are there for you whenever you need them. You can call or text Ben, the CEO, at any time. 267-391-7425. Responsive. Two, like they are independent. So a lot of mortgage brokers, they have like relationships with banks that maybe you don't know about on the top right there. And they might lead you toward that bank, even if it doesn't benefit you specifically. But Mortgage CS does not do that. They don't do that. They're independent. And the third thing is they're there to help educate you about what goes on with a mortgage, why the rate isn't always the rate, what you have to look out for. So even if you don't end up using Mortgage CS in the end, you will walk away knowing more. They're wonderful folks. We are happy to have them as a sponsor. Go to mortgagecs.com/Ricky. mortgagecs.com/Ricky. You'll see the awesome little site they've created for our listeners. And you can schedule a conversation with them there, or just call or text Ben right now. Do it now. 267-391-7425. Tons of 5-star reviews on Google. You can look them up. Again, mortgagecs.com/Ricky or Ben at 267-391-7425. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit mortgagecs.com/Ricky for more information. That about it? That about everybody on the team, I think? Right?
Yeah. I did want to get... They said right before the game that Saban Lee was available.
Mm.
And I wanted it.
But we didn't get it.
I wanted it. Everyone could feel that I wanted it. Hopefully, if PJ's out for a game tomorrow, then we can move everybody up a level and get a little more penetration in there. But there's... Look, let's not... This is not like a stable team. This is
No.
Some of the offense.
We're having
really
a stable moment in an unstable time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some offense is just like they're not getting the ball past the foul line, and then it's like a step back Melton three. And he's been hitting them for the most part. He had a pretty bad offensive second half and a really bad play to end the first half when he fouled Paolo Banchero 70 feet from the basket. Really dumb thing to do for a smart player. So the offense is not always perfect, but I would like to see a little bit more dribble penetration, which is what Saban Lee gives you, and also point of attack defense from him. But I wanted it. It's just a little of like, you gave me a fun new two-way toy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asking for a guy who can handle the ball. Grant Riller, unfortunately, didn't make it. Other guys in the past didn't make it. Saban Lee has had some NBA success in little spurts in Detroit and stuff. So let me just like, give me a, come on. Everybody else is hurt. Give me a taste. Come on.
The last thing I wanted to bring up is we've honestly very only lightly touched on the Embiid injury. Like somebody asked in the chat, in the YouTube chat, how long do we think he'll actually be out? And did somebody say 2 to 3 weeks somewhere? Was that an official thing or from a reporter somewhere? Originally, we saw 3 games, which was obviously fake. I don't know. A foot sprain on a 7-foot, 275-pound guy, and then the combination of a foot sprain and a guy that's had 2 broken bones in the other foot, and then the fact that he gets out of shape so quickly. I feel like this could be like a secret 5-week injury or something.
Oh, that'd be tough.
Yeah.
That'd be really tough.
Yeah.
Wouldn't like that for him. Wouldn't like that for us.
Obviously, yeah, do you have a gut feeling on it?
No, I'm just in the season, injuries during the season, like not before the playoffs. I'm just like, I'm just trying to eat innings over here, you know? And so we're eating innings and we're surviving. I can't like get my head above water. Looking at the schedule, they have 4 out of their next 5 are on the road. They're at the Magic and then a back-to-back at home against the Hawks. And then 3 straight on the road at Cleveland, at Memphis, at Houston. And then as of Friday, December 9th, they have 7 at home in a row. They're at home for 2 straight weeks.
In what month? And
it'd be nice to, maybe that's a good time. If it's something, that's a good time for him to come back. If they can survive, you know, Magic, Hawks, Cavs, Grizzlies, Rockets, if they can win 3 of those, it's going to be tough to beat the Hawks, Cavs, or Grizzlies as is. But if they can steal 3 and go 3-2 out of the next 5, that'd be nice. And then if MB can come back for that home stretch, that'd be helpful. But I mean, I have no idea. Foot sprain. It's hard to know what, if it's just the Sam Cassell, he's always grabbing stuff.
Yeah, but this time he's out.
I'm sort of gotten like Cassell pilled of just like, he's always grabbing stuff. It's the sprain, it doesn't, whatever, he's grabbing shit.
So I noticed this the other day, CJ, I don't know if you noticed because CJ posts the podcast on Spotify. If you listen on Spotify, there's this thing right under the podcast where you can ask listeners questions and then they comment underneath. It is wild. Like there's no reviews on Spotify, but so Spotify was nice enough to post on our last one, post a question. What did you think of this episode or whatever? And we got
incisive question.
Yeah. So we got loved it, a fitting and fatigued conversation of an incredible game. Best episode this season. Thank you. Thank you. But we can post whatever we want. So like Mike, you are perfect to hate a segment like this. What would you like to post as the question for this particular episode? And we will read some of the responses next pod. I have an idea. It's just something I already asked you, but if you have something better.
What's your idea? Let's hear it.
Well, I was just going to ask, you know, do you think Tobias Harris will be on the Sixers after the trade deadline? Or who is more likely to be on the Sixers during the playoffs, Shake Milton or Tobias Harris? But if you have something more fun...
No, well, I mean, just off of that question, the Daryl after the game.
Oh, no.
Because Daryl does the, like, he's active, but he wants to be, like, a team player. And so he tweeted that, like, Tobias carrying the team on his back during this run. Mm-hmm. And it felt very much, like it was a good Tobias game. But, like, they won last night because Shake almost had a triple-double.
He's felt trade like, marketing.
It was definitely like very obvious trade marketing.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to convince whoever follows me on Twitter that like Tobias has been carrying this team. I just think like, I don't know if that's the case or if he's just trying to like, you know, show him some love and make sure he feels like he's wanted. And obviously Tobias over the course, since he got here has been like, that was too much to pay for a trade. This is too much for a contract. All of that was before Daryl got here. But it seems like Daryl is invested in making sure his players know that he like gives a shit about them, which for like a, you know, the caricature of Daryl as like an analytics guy is like a different kind of thing. But yeah, it definitely felt like trade marketing. I don't think that Tobias is going to be traded. I don't think that there's any trade that works out this season that would be like a relevant Tobias Harris trade, maybe in the offseason. But during the season, I think it's like, it's just too big of a contract with, you're gonna have to tack on so many people to get there.
What?
And I just don't think it'll ever, I don't think there's a possibility of it. And I think it'd be like not worth it on like a chemistry level during the season.
That is the only thing I don't care about is like their fucking chemistry and good guy Tobias and locker room and yada yada yada. This team fucking fails every year. They can ship out Tobias. He's been here every year if they want. This is the question I want to pose. CJ, if you could pose this when you post the podcast, because I was debating this with Elliot Shore Parks yesterday, and we can do this when we get the responses. Who do you think has had a better career as general manager, Howie Roseman or Daryl Morey? Who has proven to be a better general manager, Daryl Morey or Howie Roseman?
I mean, I think absolutely Howie. I was not a Howie guy for a while, but over the last like 2 years, like he's had an impressive run. And for non-Eagles fans, Howie Roseman is the Eagles GM. And Howie's obviously won a Super Bowl. Like it's hard to
get lucky in the NBA and win a title though. Like how
for sure. I mean, I think the thing that Daryl did is trade for James Harden. And like, that is the number one thing that Daryl has done. And you look at the rest of his tenure, both in Houston and here, it's been like, yeah, solid move. That's interesting. Found this guy on the scrap heap kind of thing, but he's not like, there's no other hang your hat on this type of move.
Well, creating a situation in which he was able to trade for James Harden is part of it without tanking. Having the best record in the league while he was president of basketball operations there and presenting the only serious Western Conference challenge to the best Warriors team, I think is.
And absolutely. But that is, I mean, that was all acquiring James Harden.
Part of acquiring Harden. Yeah, for sure.
I think that was a big like.
But that's the NBA versus the NFL.
It felt like once you do the thing that gets you into the conversation, mm-hmm. you get like plaudits for that for a while, but then it becomes like, okay, you've done that. Like, how are you going to capitalize? And for a bunch of reasons, a lot of them luck and that, you know, the 3-point shooting barrage that of misses in the, I'm forgetting what year it is, but when they went like over 25 or something, there becomes the like, well, what you have to get over the hump now. You can't just hang your hat on that for long enough. I like Daryl a lot as a person. And I think he's a certainly above average GM, but like,
wow.
I think as far as what the
above average, certainly yeah, above average. Average.
Top 10.
Of course he's above average.
Yeah,
top
for sure. 10. Wow. Top, I mean, top 10 somewhere. I don't know. I haven't done but like you look at it and you're like, needs to get there, needs to get over the hump. And it feels like both Daryl and the Sixers have like a lot to prove. And you could say the same that Doc does as well. Doc probably doesn't think he does. And I wouldn't mind if Doc wasn't here to not prove it. But I think like everybody on the team in this organization, Daryl, Doc, Embiid, Harden, like all the main guys, you can add Tobias as far as like, can he consistently be the guy that they need him to be as like catch and shoot guy, play defense, and now like help a little bit when everybody's hurt. Like a lot of people in this organization have a lot to prove, and it would be nice if this was the year that they all like proved it together.
My hottest take on this is that Daryl probably shouldn't have taken the Philadelphia job. Like when you want to get paid, and if he stays long enough, it'll end up fine. I don't know if he'll win a title. Probably won't win a title, but it'll end up fine. I think when you look at what he walked into, not making excuses for him, have been critical when I need to be critical at 100%, not like a Daryl sycophant at all, but walked into, when you think about it, Al Horford was making $30 million. Tobias Harris had a max contract. Ben Simmons had a max contract. Josh Richardson was also on the team. Several draft picks out the door. Did Embiid sign his extension while Daryl was here? So essentially, like,
but you could have done the same thing about Houston, I think.
Well, but he had time to
I'm
to
saying
work through
left in Houston, several draft picks out the door, Russell Westbrook making $1 billion.
Right. But like, they got to a point where they had a chance to win a title. I think the only thing I would say in Philadelphia is he has walked into a situation that was probably untenable. Like the biggest, we could nitpick like smaller deals or whatever. The biggest, I think the biggest thing that will kill Daryl is playing chicken with the Ben Simmons situation. Like, I just think he should have traded Ben before the Hawks series even happened. And I think like that was a ticking time bomb. There was no way to know it would have gotten that bad, but I do think he was on the precipice of Ben's value tanking. And I think he waited too long on Ben. And
yeah, but I mean, still got James Harden for him, you know?
Like, but
still,
we get this version of James Harden. We didn't get real James Harden. We got like,
yeah, I mean, he's certainly older. And I think it seemed like he could have gotten Tyrese Halliburton for him. We've done this conversation a bunch of times.
Yeah.
But like, as far as what the window was, do you want to extend it with Halliburton or do you want to try to like assume that Embiid doesn't have as much time as we want him to and see if Harden is better now? You can make the case for either one. I'd probably take the, knowing that the version of James Harden we have now, who is very good, but still obviously having lost a step. I probably would rather have had Halliburton, who is the guy I loved. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think as far as Daryl walking into the situation, like there's no open GM jobs that are like better than the one he walked into with the Sixers. Like,
no, but he didn't have to work like that year, you know, like I guess. And also, by the way, the Doc Rivers thing is also a wrinkle in this, in that he was already hired and given some sort of front office say, whatever. Anyway, that will be the Spotify question. And we'll do one every pod. You'll hate it. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, the 12 deals of Christmas. LL, a famous Christmas advocate, LL Pavorsky, the first advertiser on the Right Streaky Sanchez podcast. If you sign up for LL's mailing list, you get them emailed to you every day. You can check them out on social. The first deal of Christmas is this rich and silky blue sapphire and diamond band, 1.86 carats with 5 modified brilliant oval cut sapphires, all set in 18 carat white gold band. Normally, $2,950. The 12 deals of Christmas price, $1,395. What do you think of that, Mike?
I love it.
$13.95. There you go. No, just kidding. LL, the first sponsor of the pod, a wonderful gentleman. Great now for the deals of Christmas. Also great for engagement rings. Also wants you to know that when you're dealing with LL, it's different. It's mano a mano. It is you and him. It is not some salesperson, commission-based salesperson that's pounded on you and pressuring you. No. It's LL, the guy whose name is on the sign outside of the store. It's always been that way, will always be that way. 35 years in business. 35 years. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, 707 Walnut. Like I said, you want an engagement ring, you want one of the 12 deals of Christmas, just reach out to him. Make an appointment to talk to him. 215-627-2252, lee@llpavorsky.com, or on Twitter @LLPavorsky. Supporter of our charities, Providence Animal Center, Mama T's Community Fridge, LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Could sell a lovely bracelet to the Grinch, and then the Grinch would email us how nice of an experience he had.
It is true. It is true. I want to play a quick game with you called Tobias or Former Sixer. And I will present a former Sixer.
Your last podcast, you were like, Tobias can stay. They beat the Nets. No. You're all about it. And now you're fully back. Yeah. Multiple segments about Tobias is going to be gone before then. Tobias is the reason why Daryl's not going to be successful here. Like all this, like hitting him hard after you was convinced that he can stay.
One pod. He got a one pod break. I gave him the pod. I gave him his credit. He also doesn't need credit because he's making nearly $40 million. Whether he gets credit from me, unnecessary. I just want you to know. I want you to respond whether the Sixers would be better with Tobias Harris or this former Sixer.
Okay.
Tobias Harris or Seth Curry?
Tobias.
Tobias Harris or Markelle Fultz?
Tobias.
Tobias Harris or Robert Covington?
Covington has become the like kind of an overrated, underrated guy.
Mm-hmm.
And has never become like a great shooter. Was always like a fine volume type guy, but has never really taken the leap of what's he shooting from three this year?
I don't know. I'll take a look. We'll always like, shoot them. by the way. No, certainly always not afraid of shooting.
And is certainly like better. He's shooting 37% from three, which is fine.
Yeah.
But high only volume, on 2.3 attempts per game. Is he only playing 14 minutes a game?
What's going on? Yeah.
That's bizarre. Covington's now 32.
That team's fucking bizarre.
Covington's now 31. He's about to turn 32 in 2 weeks. That's wild. Look at Covington creating like a 10-year NBA career.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I would say like when he's right, Covington, but I watched a little bit of the Clippers last night, but I haven't watched a ton of them this year. So I don't know. He's shooting 35% from the field. I'll say right now, I'll say Tobias.
Wow. TJ McConnell or Tobias Harris?
Tobias Harris.
You laugh. The Sixers don't have a backup point guard.
Sure they do.
No, they don't.
Shake Milton. He's been excellent. And Maxian Harden will be in the playoffs, split off on backup point guard duties. TJ wouldn't play in the playoffs here.
Tobias Harris, well, and Daryl hates TJ McConnell. He made one offhand comment on a pod before he was even president of the Sixers that made me know that he hates TJ McConnell, even though he'll deny it. Tobias or Nerlens Noel?
Tobias. Nerlens isn't playing. He's DNPCDs.
Well, I'm asking you, who would you rather have on the Sixers?
Tobias.
Tobias or Danny Green? Fully healthy Danny Green.
It's interesting because like they already have PJ Tucker. And I think how rough PJ Tucker looks offensively to have another guy like Danny or like, you know, the idea that kind PJ, of player.
Danny Green is a much better offensive player than PJ Tucker.
Not much.
Yes, he is.
More willing shooter from range, but like still not a guy that I trust PJ Tucker with the ball in his hands more. He's a much better offensive rebounder than Danny is.
Danny hit more corner threes than any player in the league 2 years ago.
Well, PJ has also been an excellent corner. That's like he shot like 48% from three from the corners for a while. It hasn't been as good this year, but that was like definitely his thing. I will say a fully healthy, like whatever age Danny is right now, 35, 36, I'll still say Tobias.
Tobias
knowing that PJ is here.
Tobias or Dwight Howard.
Come on.
Okay. Tobias or Alec Burks?
Alec Burks is pretty good. He seems like a weird guy that goes from team to team and everyone goes like, he's pretty good. And then like, he's gone immediately afterwards. But I will say Tobias for defense.
Tobias Harris or Al Horford? I mean,
I'll say last year Horford, this year Tobias.
This is amazing.
I'm riding the fence there.
Tobias or Dario Saric?
Oh, poor Dario. Get him out of Phoenix. Let him play somewhere. Tobias.
Tobias or Rashawn Holmes?
Tobias.
Tobias or Jeremy Grant?
Jeremy had 44 last night.
Oh, really?
He went to the line, I think, 28 times. Crazy. In a win, overtime win over the Knicks. I'll say Jeremy.
Well, finally. That was your first former Sixer choice, I think.
Well, I think I was really, I'm as we're doing this, I'm like, either I'm becoming a Tobias guy because mm-hmm. Jason Lipschitz got to me, or a lot of former Sixers are bad.
It's probably a little bit of both. You know, I think you're feeling a need to be a Tobias guy, given my hard turn.
There's an inherent balance to it, but I really, honestly, truly have been happy with Tobias this season. You have to you just have to throw the contract away. Like, Dow didn't sign him to that. You and me weren't fighting for it. Like, it is what it is at this point. And you go like, okay, fine. How can you be helpful to the ball club? And the only thing that frustrates me about Tobias, really, truly the only thing, offensively, I'm not frustrated. He's been getting the ball off quick. He's making decisions. Is on defense when he is in no man's land, helping no one and then not recovering to shooters. That's the only thing that frustrates me about Tobias these days, which is good. It does kill me. that helping for no reason and not actually helping and then recovering late to a shooter. It blows my mind that coaches want that. But aside from that, happy with Tobias.
Let's just get a couple of listener things in before we go. The voicemail is 833-LICK-FACE. The email is writestrickysanchez@gmail.com. Speaking of help defense, we got a help defense voicemail. So here we go.
What's up, Spike and Mike and DJ?
Well, did we hear that? Real quick, I want to play that again. Hold on.
What's up, Spike and Mike and DJ?
DJ.
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 Got one for each of you here. So I'm watching the Ben Simmons game right now, and I'm just blown away by how quick and ready everyone is to turn back on Ben's good side. He's put together three good games, and he has a couple assists in the first half. He's still doing the same drive and overpassing, wide open shots, missing it. His post game is fucking terrible. And why are people so ready to hop back on the Ben Simmons train? And for Mike,
hold on, let me answer that. Obviously, there is, first, everybody wants to blame Philadelphia for everything. There is part of that there.
Yes.
Second, it is a nice story to get online and be like, oh, or on air and be like, this guy battled through a mental thing, which disrespects those who do, but like, it's just like, nobody's going to do a broadcast. You made this point and be like, man, this guy still fucking sucks. Mm-hmm. Which is why you need the TNT guys like to at least be honest about how they feel or something.
That's right.
So you don't expect Stan Van Gundy to just get on the air and be like, well, still fucking scared. So
totally.
That's why.
And I'm not an inside the NBA guy. I think that generally they just are not paying attention. And I don't like most of their opinions, but to your point, this is why they are valuable.
Yeah.
In like a, be honest about something and not afraid to like,
they don't
say care how they feel rather than just being the like, I'm friggin' Dave Pash. And I'm just saying like, everybody's good. Everybody's nice. How about this?
So here comes the Mike question.
To hop back on the Ben Simmons train. And for Mike, this is something you pointed out a couple podcasts ago, but it just blows my mind. I can fix the defense in one point. Stop helping. I'll focus on Shake Milton for this, but every single play, he helps off of his guy to the ball, and then they just pass it to him, and he fakes effort on the closeout. And all the players do this, and it's not helpful, and it just literally gives them wide open shots. So why do they do that? Maybe we can get Doc to know what's going on there, but. All right. Peace, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of guys on the Sixers that cannot stop dribble penetration, point of attack. And so I get the idea of helping in some sense, on some levels you need to, but the like automatic help off of whichever shooter, doesn't matter. They're still helping. I mean, I guess they wouldn't help off of like, you know, Steph Curry or something, but like everybody else, pretty much they're like, yeah, help off of Wes Matthews. Help off of who they play. I mean, Bol Bol, who can hit shots like that.
Sure.
Help off of whoever. It doesn't matter. Like it is, I don't, it's not a Doc thing. It's a most coaches thing. I think there's something about like coaching defense and like togetherness where the worst thing that can happen is somebody beats your guy off the dribble and then they score. You want to make them pass, I think, is their thought process. But in this world where like coaching, you know, transition offense is run to the 3-point line and get off an open three, why is coaching defense prevent a tough contested two is less valuable than give up a wide open three? Like I just don't, it seems like there should be a disconnect. Like the offensive guys and the defensive guys should talk to each other. And like the Ben stuff was, that's just, I mean, like you guys know Ben, why are you doubling him? Why are you helping at all? Make him finish.
Yes.
In anything other than a wide open dunk.
He doesn't want to do it.
He doesn't want to do it. He's begging for it. Yeah. I mean, I think we should get a coach on so that I can talk to another coach, which I think is helpful. But I think this is the kind of thing it'd be nice to ask them, be like, why?
What coach why is
it,
could we
does
get
it kill
on?
You as much as it kills me when people overhelp? And it's not like, look, Melton does this, and I think good defensive players do this. Well, they'll Matisse will do it sometimes, Marcus Smart will do it sometimes, where they're like help on a blind side of a guy and try to make a play off of it where he's not expecting it. And then they're capable of getting back to their guy relatively quickly. But when it's like Tobias or Korkmaz or Shake, like guys who are not as quick to get back to somebody and are not also helping on the drives in any tangible way, I want to know like why they want that, why they want them to leave an open shooter so that they can be an additional body in the way of a guy that's already covered. I would like to know.
And finally, an email from a longtime listener and emailer, Arsenio, writes rickysanchez@gmail.com. Arsenio says, we've slogged through 50-win seasons knowing deep down we weren't true contenders come playoffs. This season is kind of refreshing. If we're really playoff motherfuckers, we can't worry about a shitty start, injuries, Doc playing corpses, PJ putting quadruple nothings, etc. It's enjoy the ride, which is something I thought you would enjoy. The question is, how do you guys consume other NBA games? I have several other interests and a family, but I try to semi-watch one game on nights the Sixers don't play. I think the question is, how much NBA do we consume? I probably watch two other NBA games a week, if not every minute, but sit and watch a significant portion of it, I would say. There's no strategy behind it. It's really just sort of what's on, or because I'm up here, I can watch the Knicks or the Nets more often than I did previously.
Yeah, I'll try to get a taste of every team, and I'll, as the season goes on, I'll find myself like gravitating towards teams I'm excited by.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough when we're watching every Sixers game and then doing a podcast often midweek, like during other games are on.
Yeah.
But I'll try to bounce around as much as I can. And now that Alyssa works later than I do, I have some time to be doing that, which is pretty good.
The other thing I'd say, and I've said this before, is if you just watch the Sixers, you do see every other NBA team at least two times, some of them three and four times.
But it's fun to watch two teams that are not the Sixers.
Yes. It's more fun, I believe, in a lot of ways. But as far as like an understanding the league perspective, I think like you get more out of watching one team than you think you would, as long as you're open to watching it. But yeah, like it's sort of my default night programming. If there's nothing on that I want to watch, I just turn on a basketball game, and that's sort of how it works.
What was the first part of that question, of his comment?
The first part of his comment was just that.
Oh, this season.
Enjoy the ride. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
enjoy the ride. Okay.
I am. I mean, I am on some level. I absolutely am. And feeling like not living and dying with every game, and the fact that they were 9-9 before yesterday, I was just like, yeah, well, they're injured and they'll it'll be fine, and they have guys that'll get healthier and they'll win regular season games and they'll finish somewhere in the top six of the Eastern Conference. But the thing that the Doc playing corpses stuff is that's not a temporary problem. Like right. that is you're seeing, that's a foreshadowing is what it is. And you can see it going forward, something bad happening. And so, the things, it's frustrating. And hopefully B-Ball Paul is just like earning the coaching staff's like validation, and someone will have to like prevent Doc from playing Trez in a playoff series. But, and also interested to see what that 15th roster spot is going to be. Cause now that Isaiah Joe and Charles Bassey are like genuinely playing rotation minutes, the Spurs are bad, but I think still playing like relatively decent ball when they're healthy. A lot of guys keep getting hurt. And the Thunder are like, they just beat the Bulls.
The Spurs have a worse net rating than the Sixers ever had, by the way, this year. Yeah.
Minus, and the Bulls are, the Thunder is like, the Thunder are good. With Shea makes the Thunder a good basketball team. When he's not there, they're obviously not. But like they're capable and not tanking currently. Would love if they acquired Kevin Durant, by the way. That would be great. But Isaiah Joe is playing for them and is just like stroking threes. And so watching Charles Bassey be a useful backup center when the Sixers have one in B-Ball Paul, but not one in Montrezl Harrell, and watching Isaiah Joe be a capable player, they need, like, it's a little, I understand the process here, to use a term that people are familiar, that, like, you want to keep the 15th roster spot open, but the results also have to work out for you to have left two guys that we could use out in the cold and other teams to get them and now are using them well. Like, something's got to work out with that 15th roster spot. So make it happen, Daryl, at some point.
The Spurs point differential is minus 10.6 right now. By far the worst in the league. Second worst being the Pistons at minus 7.6. Seems like the Spurs are going to get into and have lost seven in a row. What a fun trip that's going to be to Austin and San Antonio. I can't wait to just beg Pop to, we have to start that soon, I think. Pop to get himself thrown out and Brett Brown to coach the game. Well, enjoy Shake Milton, this version of Shake Milton, while we have him. That's the lesson, friends. We will talk to you next time. Support small businesses on this Small Business Saturday. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you know, look, face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.